Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. Got no telling where this one's going to go. Because I thought I already did this podcast. I thought it was already out here. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Here I'm talking about the subject of needism in a podcast. And I think, well, I've already described what that is. So I can talk about it. And I was thinking, well, I never did. Oh, I've written a blog on it. The blog on the Medium, I'll put a link to it, is called Needism. The more repressed we are, the more narcissistic we behave. And that's just conscious knowledge, actually. When you process buried emotions, you become aware of your own narcissism. There's not a single person, not one, who has come here and taken the test and found anger repression as their dominant repression, who did not find covert narcissism. There's not a single person. That's just how trustable that is. And that's why you hear me talking about it, because there's so many people who do not realize the depth of their own, you know, patterns. And we get away with it. You can't get away with narcissism if you're a hurt repressor, because your narcissism is big energy. It's like anger. And you're like, you're really, really, you know, constantly in some way looking powerful or whatever, charismatic, you know, comes in the room and just, oh, it's Slick Rick. That's the extreme version of it. But no, it's just the same on the other side. It's like anger repressors, that big energy is just totally tucked down. So the world's kind of just divided in two, big duality in the body, really. If you can simplify it, duality to this. Some people, the power, their anger is too scary. They buried it. Some people, their vulnerability is too powerful, too scary. They buried it. Some people buried all of it. This was survival in childhood. We have no consciousness of this. You can't be aware of something that's buried. You can only be aware of something that you're suppressing. Suppression. Like, I'm sad. I need to push this down because my friends are coming over. Is suppression. But repression is like you're a little kid and dad's about ready to yell at you or come at you, and you don't even have the consciousness to know that you could fight back. You don't even know. That's not even an option. And you're hiding within a matter of time, and your system does not open to anger at all. That doesn't mean you're not angry. It just means that it has to do something with that. But you have a right as a kid to get angry. If you had the safe space to feel and express everything and a conscious parent, well, that conscious parent wouldn't be coming at you like that so unconsciously. But you also would be raised by parents who would allow you to feel and express everything that's true if we lived on a different planet. But we don't. So now we have a world of people who trigger each other. And I didn't see it either. I mean, until you process buried emotions, I don't think you can see where suffering comes from. No, you can't. You can guess at it. Or science has done a good job. Science has done a good job better than non-duality teachers at discovering the root of suffering, I think, for sure. And people like John Sarno and Freud did a better job of finding the root of suffering, ironically, than the non-dual teachers. I hate to say that. It's true. Non-dual teachings, unless they're embodied or non-dual realization, unless it's embodied, is driven by the same needism and trauma. It's all human stuff. And we can take anything and just, you know, rape it, make it our own, and then get our needs met. I mean, the highest sutras have been, you know, I'm sure somewhere somebody has in some way used Buddha's highest sutra to somehow impress a room full of Buddhists. I know that's just how humans are. Or, I don't know. You know, like somebody, a teacher say, well, I don't have any sexual desire. And then goes and masturbates at night. Or a monk. The monks masturbate a lot. I don't know if you guys hear those stories. Wouldn't you? I would. I'd be masturbating. And I'd probably be reaching over to the next monk. I probably would. I'm just telling you. I mean, why wouldn't I? I mean, I'm a sexual being. Why the hell am I there anyway? Unless I'm trying to extinguish my sexual desire. And if that's what's going on, I'm going to want to grab that monk at night, I'll tell you. I'm probably going to ask him if it's okay. Unless he just wants it too, and then I'll just do it. You don't have to ask if you know they want it, you know. I'm just trying to be honest because this goes on and we can't hide it, you know. And we can't hide our rage in spirituality. We can try, but it just comes out as disease and chronic pain and chronic niceness and inauthenticity or peacefulness. So we all have needs. This is why I knew this topic was going to go in a number of different directions, because I can take it in a couple of directions, because we all have them, but we try to get our needs met in distinct ways. And if I could just stick to the repression, which is the root of it. So if you read this blog that I have, you'll see that what we've discovered here is the structure of our consciousness, you could say. Like we can see the layers of consciousness with KI from the bottom up, because we work at the bottom up here. We don't work from the inside out. We work from the outside in. Excuse me. We don't work from the outside in. We work from the inside out. It's called an inside out mentorship program, which you go to the body where the conditioning is and you find a couple of things. First, you find, fuck, I'm angry and I didn't know it. Or, damn, I'm hurt and I can't feel it and I didn't know it. Or all of the above, or sadness. And then later on, you find you're afraid to like get rejected, hurt, and that's in your body. And then you find needs. And the needs are like for love, safety, approval. And these are not stories. So they're not things that you can witness in awareness, none of these things. They have like products. Like there'll be stories that come from needs. Like let's say if I have a need for love, I might believe I'm not good enough because that could get me love. Maybe it always has. By being humble or small or not good enough, then I'm not angry, I'm not big. And maybe you like that, mom, dad, right? And so, yeah, if we can all just start from the premise that we all have needs and that we're lying if we say otherwise, including if we're in spirituality, we're much better off, I think, in the end. Because spirituality has this way of like denying things that are very human. That's its danger. And that's what that will make like a lot of spirituality irrelevant in the future. We already have the science that makes it irrelevant, a lot of it. But there's still some old things that need to die, like dinosaurs, just ideas like that you can question who you are through thoughts, or that you can just feel all your feelings. None of that makes any sense if you've done deep somatic work and you've read the science, that you can just allow it all. Because some things are buried. You can't allow what's buried. That's fact. It's not even like a position. It's not even an opinion. It's like some things in our English language are just really clear. Buried stuff doesn't arise. It's like a grave. It's not going to come out of the ground. Or a coffin. It's buried. So anything we say about it, we don't have any knowledge of it until we've done that work. And that's why we don't talk about it, because we don't have any awareness of it. All we have is the surface needism that comes out as anything but that. In other words, it might come out as like, here's a dominating energy that's coming into the room. Isn't he big? And you don't realize that he's really hurt, like super hurt and afraid of that, like super insecure. And that big energy is completely a front. And if you process your barrier, you can just stand right up to those people. I do all the time. I'm like, back the fuck down and stop being mean to people. My fucking God. That's what I've said to people before who come in with that energy and they just want to trample on people. And that's how you have to have boundaries sometimes. Now, if somebody's bigger than me, I won't do that. But I will not sit in a space with somebody who will not listen to other people anymore, because I think it's dominating. It's like, you know, all relationship is two ways. And I stay quiet my whole life and I just sat there and listened to people that talked a lot. And I was in repression. I needed their love. I was attracted to people who talked a lot because I was quiet. And I was attracted to hurt repressors who would be like pretty big, bad boys and different archetypes that were hurt and sadness repressors. And they would take up all the space. But then, of course, I got into a relationship and I had conflict with that person, as you guys know. and I came out of repression. All I found were my boundaries. I didn't find any meanness. Oh yeah, I did. I found hatred, but I got through that because that was childhood stuff. And then I found the love in my experience and my boundaries. And I always say now I'm connected and boundaried to people. And that's how I love. It's like, if you don't have authenticity, you can't love people. You can't build trust. You don't know who each other is. So there's no trust and there can't be intimacy. And I just didn't know these things when I had repression. Because all I wanted was my needs to get met, even as a teacher. And that's how insidious it is. And I'm asking you guys to pay better attention for yourselves if you want to be free of suffering. You can't just go to a smiling, peaceful persona and assume anything anymore with the science that we have. I'm telling you. You don't want to just be on the lookout for big and angry people. That is coming from your anger repression, if you have it. And we tend to trauma bond, we anger repressors, with other anger repressors who will make sure that we do not end suffering. Because they haven't. Because they're anger repressors. They don't think they're angry. And how do you end suffering if you haven't gotten to the root of it? No matter how many people you help or how sweet you are or how loving and full of light, it doesn't matter. The unconscious is driving everything. Well, I mean, I was listening to the leading expert on narcissism. I won't say her name because it's not important. To me, it's the concepts that we're talking about and the experiential work and the transformation, to me, is the important thing. But because of social media, we get to learn from each other and we get to see and spot our shadows. And by spotting our shadows, we get to see our own needs. Eventually, when you do this work, and when you do, you're going to see all the trauma bonding and the narcissism that happens on social media. It is not obvious when you have repression. This is why I talk about it, because it is not obvious. There's like a toxic culture of empathy online. Now, how can empathy be toxic? That's exactly what an anger repressor would say who hasn't done their work. I have to just tell you what that means, is that empathy is a natural human trait. We think we own it, and we own it in our relationships, and we tend to get with people who aren't as empathetic as we are, and we choose them from our anger repression, and then they're our shadow, and we wonder, why aren't they more empathetic? They can't be. We chose them because they're hurt and sadness repressors. If they are, they cannot be, and it's not because they're narcissists any more than we are, and we are, and so they are. But nobody really is. There's no separation. There's repression and the appearance of it, trauma. We're projecting it onto each other for safety and love, which gives us separation. And it comes from this deep-seated set of needs that weren't met when we were kids. Validation, love, approval, safety. Also things like to be heard, but I don't like that one for processing for myself, because the way to be heard is to get louder. It's not to suffer by believing that you're not heard. That's a simple expression thing that people can't see, or I'm not seen, I'm not understood. You have to express yourself before anybody would ever begin to understand you or hear you. And with repression, we can't. So we have to start with ourselves. See that? We can't ever look at anyone else ultimately. And if there's anything before I die that I hope that I show people, is you really cannot look outside yourself, because there isn't anyone out there. It's a projection. And that projection serves a purpose to get needs met. Suffering serves our needs, unmet needs, unresolved unmet needs from childhood. Now, that's all buried, so I can't convince you, and your system will want to fight that until you do this work and see it. And that's just all there is to it, because this is our deepest resistance and our deepest and most core drivers. So this is running everything, and this will run your resistance. Because by resisting KI, you get your needs met to stay safe from the buried emotions and to continue to get love and approval from everyone. Do you hear me? Because you have to embody presence to be free of the shackles of that, because that's the trauma. And if you don't do the processing of buried emotions, you don't discover the needs that you're driven by. So then that brings us to social media culture, which is just a reflection of human culture and relationship, where you see trauma playing itself out in what I call, I mean, people call narcissism, but I think it's better to call it needism. Narcissism, it's just the word itself is just what it is, right? And it's just so much confusion. There's nobody, including me, who has any real clarity on something unconscious because you can't express that directly. But I'll give it a try, having done my work. Everybody has that. Some people have a diagnosable, so there are normal kinds of narcissism, if you want to call it this, needism. We have boundaries. Those are needs for safety and different things. Like, we don't want burglars coming into your house. You have boundaries and needs. That's narcissistic. You can think of it that way, to only be concerned with yourself. Why are you concerned with protecting your house? That's so narcissistic for you just to be concerned about your house and your own safety. How dare you be so self-centered when the rest of us should be able to come into your house? See, you shouldn't have any boundaries. What's that all about? Why aren't you free? You see, that doesn't make any sense. Because everybody has there's a certain amount of respect for the sovereign space of each individual physical space. And there are boundaries there that we all already project into reality and respect, most of us, in order to get along. And hopefully, well, survive, but hopefully thrive. That doesn't always happen. But now think of it much bigger than that. We all have to have those boundaries because that's our self-expression. It's not just our house. It's like, you can't come and rape me either. I mean, you can, but if I can protect myself by saying no in certain situations, by not going to certain places, if I'm a woman or a man, and trusting myself, being able to feel and express what's true, get out of situations, leave relationships, stick with people who are safe, grow and develop, challenge yourself, but don't put yourself, as you're clear, in situations in which, you know, that comes from doing your trauma work. I just want to tell you that comes. There's so much empowerment for victims here. So much empowerment. I can't even begin to tell you the power that you have within you, with your buried anger, for example. Those have needs with them, and one of them is for safety, but you can't find safety within. I notice that with people who are suffering. They can't find safety within, and they don't even know what that is. So let me try to explain it. You're a sovereign being. You're also not separate from anything, but ultimately you're a sovereign being. You have the right to feel and express what is true for you. The fact that our society doesn't recognize it doesn't mean anything. It's still your right, because you don't have to suffer if you don't want to. And I just wanted to say that in case you didn't know that you have that right, because we grew up in families where it didn't feel safe to be ourselves. I'm sorry, and I assume you're sorry to me for me too, but it's just the way it is. Now we can transform if we get serious about how and why we're suffering. Because we don't have boundaries. And what that means is we don't know ourselves. That's all that means. Please don't ever take the boundaries thing as clinical or dry. It's what you are. It's just like your house. If you have your power and your authenticity and you've done your work, you're going to have relationships that work for you. And you're not going to stay in those relationships that don't. And the reason is because the relationships that weren't working before you did your work, you were in those relationships to get your needs met. And you just didn't know it. And that's exactly what everybody tells me. It's what I experienced. And that's how life becomes authentic, because we're no longer driven by that. And then we can just be ourselves. And that's really beautiful. That's what this is all about. It's not about processing. The processing is what brings about the realization. We have to process, but it really is about the authenticity. And if you don't know what that is, it's the key to freedom, because the science says that buried emotions produce falseness, suffering, the ways that we stay safe, we produce disease, chronic pain unconsciously to stay safe from needs. See that? Stay safe from buried emotions. Those are simple needs. Now, why would we suffer and get our needs met? Because when we were kids, we couldn't feel and express everything. So we didn't have all of our resources within us. All the emotions are resources. When we have those emotions available to us, we don't have those needs for love, approval, safety from other people, emotional safety. We only have those because we don't know who or what we are. It's like these are secondary needs to me. Because the primary or fundamental need wasn't met when we were kids. And that's this, that we don't know what we are. It has nothing to do with love or approval, the fundamental need to me. It has to do with, I went through an awakening process. And the awakening process felt very natural, like more natural than anything you can imagine, really. Natural, so natural that I understood that this is our original state. And everybody who wakes up sees that. And yet, and then you have to embody that. But when I experienced that, I knew intuitively, and I think people do, that this is what we really are. But the ego structure is there for to get our needs met. And we started with mom and dad. And we've just done that with everybody because we haven't known any different. And we've been unconscious to the fact that we're doing it. And so it just means that if you believe things, you have needs. That's all that means. It's that simple. If you believe things and suffer, you have a need for safety and love that you're trying to meet outside yourself instead of discovering the resources that are already within you, the buried emotions. Thomas Hubel calls those your potential. Your greatest potential resides in the frozen emotions in your body, he says. And that's exactly what KI shows you. So the needism on social media would be, it would be social media influencers like I used to be who don't process buried emotions, who don't really do their trauma work. They do maybe some work, but it's not enough. And increasingly the science and the research is starting to be really louder about that. In different areas of research, we're starting to recognize that codependency often comes from buried anger. We're also understanding from authors like Barbara Oakley that there's a pathology to helping when you have buried emotions and you don't process your stuff. The pathology is the trauma bonding, where I'm going to help you because my primary goal is not to really help you, but I don't know that when I have repression. My primary goal is to get my needs met. I need validation. I need love. I need approval. And I don't know it. That's the key. It's the not knowing, the being unconscious that makes it narcissistic because it's false and it's being used to get the needs, but at the surface, it's not conveying that. And it's just like any other grandiose narcissist. At the surface, something isn't being conveyed and you're being manipulated, but the covert anger repressors are doing it stealthy, in a stealthy manner. We do it from manipulation that's passive-aggressive, silent treatment, ghosting, disconnection, not taking accountability, not even knowing that we're contributing to conflict without being authentic, and then wondering why we suffer. Often taking care of the people close to us, but not taking care of ourselves enough. Not knowing we have buried anger. Always being nice, peaceful, perfect, good, achiever, people pleaser. You feel that? It's not who we are. I'm just here to tell people. It's just not, it's not any more than the charismatic, grandiose narcissist is the peaceful teacher archetype. We need humanness at this point. We just need fucking humanness. We don't need another fucking enlightened guru. That's what I'm not going to be. If that's what that means, is somebody who's disconnected from their body, who doesn't express what they really feel, what really happens in their life. They can't be honest. That's not a teacher to me. in this day and age when we have so much repression. Now, known and documented in clinical studies, research, it's everywhere in my world because I've done that research. But the thing about it is you have ChatGPT, so you can have everything that I have. Just ask the question. If you have some form of suffering, just say, how is this linked to buried emotions? And it'll show you. Either directly or indirectly, it'll show you. It'll say it's being studied, where studies are coming, or here are the studies for so many things. I still am amazed at it, how many things are connected to it. In so many different categories. And so here we are on social media trying to help each other with these categories of suffering. Or therapists, you know, the diagnoses, or the spiritual teacher with the suffering as a whole, which is a good way to measure the suffering as a whole because it all has the same root. And then in medicine and therapy, they just don't study the root. They don't get to it. But they don't do it in spirituality either. They talk about ending suffering, but you can't until you get to the root. You see, what we have is we have an earth, a repression earth, a trauma earth that is telling stories and can't transform because we can't process what's buried. We're too afraid of it. And we really are telling a story, stories to get needs met. I think spirituality is mostly a trauma response. It's a response to trauma. If I can get love by being enlightened before I'm really enlightened, that's a trauma response. Before I'm embodied, I mean. Because if I could just have an initial awakening or have this experience or go to this therapy school and then help you, well, then I don't really have to do my work. Why would I? I'm getting what I need. And so that creates needism online in two ways. I mean, they come together. It's like if I'm a helper and I get my needs met by being false, I'm going to attract people who have to be false to survive and who don't want to break out of that. Of course, that's scary. People might say they do, but repression is driving things, and it says no to that. And then if I'm helping you online, but I'm not getting to the repression, then I'm not getting to the thing that says no to life, the thing that is our resistance. And so the resistance is teaching or helping. But it looks peaceful, and you can get temporary relief here and there and some nervous system regulation, and all looks well at the surface until you start to see the overall what's really happening when you go to the science. And you see that, well, we've got disease coming. You get older. You got chronic pain. You can't take care of just one little thing when you're 28 and just be better because there's a holistic thing going on here. It's a whole system that creates suffering for safety and love over a lifetime. And so there's an evolutionary cycle behind that, as Anna Lemke says. I would just add to it like this. If we're not processing buried emotions, we're staying safe and getting love. So if something happens in our life where there's suffering and we feel bad and we do any process to feel better, that kicks in the system that says suffer more because being false works. And by the way, processing in a way that doesn't get to buried emotions keeps us safe. That works for survival. And that's why we keep suffering. It's a simple matter of not getting to the root. And the problem with the needism is that people are helping people not get to the root. And then not taking any responsibility for that. As Barbara Oakley says, for that pathological altruism, where you don't really care about the impact, you just get your needs and your money and you go to the next person. There's no connectedness. There isn't. I mean, with repression, there can't be. What is connectedness? It's relationship. Many of us are coming to spirituality and healing because we're suffering in relationship. So we can't treat spirituality as a way to disconnect from all of humanity or from, because we're not separate from humanity and we're not separate from the body, the awareness isn't. There's nothing separate from anything else. We can't just be spirit. We're spirit embodied. And when we deny the embodiment, we deny the spirit because the spirit can't express itself. What you are can't be itself without the embodiment. This is the vehicle in this lifetime for the expression of what you are. You don't have another one. And so this is an important one for this lifetime. And there is no enlightenment without the body. There's no awakening. There's no healing without the suffering, without the trauma. One brings about the other. So we have to have the suffering to have the freedom. If we don't have suffering, we don't even seek freedom. That's not even what we would do. So when you end suffering, you don't seek the end of suffering anymore. You just live your life. And then what becomes important is not ending suffering. What becomes important is living fully. And that just is very natural once you end suffering. But there's still things you have to do, like take action. And that's what I didn't understand, because I was in repression. I thought I could, you know, just process everything and do your work and don't worry about relationship, really. That'll work itself out because there's nobody there. And once you see there's nobody here, you don't have to work anything out. Don't have to take any action or anything. Don't have to say anything, really, because it's all just coming and going. It's just then this checking out from there, because it's not embodied. It's not lived. It's not human. It's not open. It's not honest. It's not earnest. It's not authentic. It's just not, until we process buried emotions. We're always trying to get our needs met. Whether we know it doesn't even matter, because we're suffering. And if you look at the literature, we suffer because of the repression and the needs. So all we need, the only evidence that we need, is the suffering. But because the suffering happens at a conscious level and the repression is repressed, we just can't see the root. There's like a repression barrier. That's our unconsciousness. That's what protects us, that barrier to knowing that we have that, so that we can continue to survive as the false separate self and survive in relationship. You know, it's not about physical survival. It's about emotional survival as the false self that gets its needs met. Same false self from childhood. Somebody said, what do you mean by false? Well, when you hold back feelings that are true when you're a kid, those aren't ultimately your true feelings. They're true for you in that moment when your needs aren't met. You're angry, but you can't feel it. It's the strongest emotion, the one that you have to hold back the most, or the hurt. And so those needs are right there with it and buried over the lifetime. It's a very vulnerable thing to discover these needs. And people think, oh, anger, that's such an aggressive thing. No, you're going to be crying. When you get to this work deep, you're going to find needs that you didn't know you had. And you're going to see why you suffered, because you wouldn't open to something that vulnerable, is what it was. Many of us, anger repressors, we can feel vulnerable feelings. That's not really vulnerability. That's identification with something that is safer than what we buried, so that we can get our needs met. We have the full range of emotions. Any of us who are really hurt or sad over a lifetime, we have buried anger. Any of us who are angry all the time, we have buried hurt or sadness. It's so obvious to me now, but when you have repression, you have to understand you're not even interested in discovering that, because you have a need for safety. That creates the repression barrier, the fear. It's a need, and then we need it from other people. Don't get angry. There's my need. You just satisfied it. And so we anger repressors control people, but covertly. There's no anger repressor who's not going to do something in the face of someone who's angry. It could just be leaving and never speaking to them again. It could be bringing it up. It could be a number of things, but you can't get close to an anger repressor by being angry very much. And that makes a lot of disconnection for people that they don't realize. Because when we disconnect as anger repressors, for example, from people who are angry or can get angry, we're disconnecting from ourselves, our own bodies. That's why we suffer even when we get away from them. Our answer is not to get away from everybody who's angry. It's to stop getting away from our own anger. And then when we can open to our own anger, we're not going to be mean people. We're going to have the anger when we need it. And that's it, to defend ourselves or whatever. But it's going to be real vulnerability. You'll see. And then authenticity is a probably better word. Because we're not going to be getting our needs met in the same way from each other. That's going to open up a whole new way of relating for people if they go all the way with that. And people have been asking me about that, about people who go that deep with the work. I'll spend a few moments here. I like to end this within 40 minutes. Okay, so when you get to a place where, I don't think you should ever say you're done. I can't tell you what to do. I don't say done because if I say something like that, I have to check into my body. But I can tell you that I don't detect needs operating in my body anymore when I'm relating to people, and I know how to check. Now, that's a big change because I was always driven by that. So I don't want to go into all the details, but dating is fun. There's no suffering. I know how to talk to people now. I just be natural. I don't feel self-conscious. I don't feel afraid to get hurt. If you would see me throughout the years, there would be times when, somebody just hurt Scott. But what it did, when I had anger repression, I could feel it and I warded it off. But here is different. I know that they can't make me happy. I know that people can't do that. I also know that people cannot give me love. I know that too. I also know that ultimately they can't keep me safe. So that's all me, right? That's what I bring to the relationship. Whereas before I brought trauma, basically. And so it's a different conversation, as you can imagine. And I find intimacy quicker with the right people now because of boundaries and communication and real connection that I'm able to foster because of my own security, like finding safety within. Like I just feel comfortable with myself. And it's not narcissism. That's what I have to tell anger repressors. They think confidence is narcissism. I can't think of many things more tragic than that. Because it's like saying, but these are people who have deficiency stories. We anger repressors. We don't love ourselves at all. It's a childhood trauma thing. And then when we look at people who are just kind of okay with themselves, like, no. And you know why? Because it's too close to anger and big energy. That's all it is. Confident people, it just depends on whether they also have empathy and that they actually care about other people. That's the thing you want to look for. It's not confidence. You want to look for, does that person have any interest in you? Or are they just so wrapped up in themselves? That's the real narcissism. People who are quiet can be totally wrapped up into themselves. So it's like, don't just go for the loud people, because that's, if you're an anger repressor, you'll do that. And the other side is true too. It's like if you have hurt or sadness repression, you might have an issue with people who are too touchy-feely. Or when I talk about vulnerability, might not like that. Or the need for love might be a kind of a touchy subject, but it's right there in your body. You might be able to get angry, or you don't feel small, or you don't put on that front like anger repressors, but it's still the same structure. It's just a lot of suffering, basically. It just doesn't matter what we repress. That's what my life is like. It's great, actually. But was the process always easy? No. But no transformative process is. And if anybody tries to sell you a process that just gives you lots of peace all the time, run. Run and take the somatic test that we have. It's like, go to the doctor if you do that, just to see if you didn't get anything there. Because you can pick up these bypassing habits very easily when you have repression. Thank you for listening. I've done 3 podcasts in a row and my voice is gone. I have to go. Thank you. Oh, there's a link in the description to come and work with me. The start of every month is my KI Jumpstart group, which allows you to learn the work in a group setting. And then always, if you're interested in one-on-one, you can come and talk to me through that link for a free talk. And then we'll just talk about whether one-on-one is a good fit. Thank you.